In a universe that almost is, just out of reach beyond the edge of reality, mysterious forces underlie the fabric of existence. Energemetra 6, the very energy of creation, serves as both the elixir of life and the arsenal of destruction for its human and not-so-human denizens.
Crushing darkness, whose source they cannot fathom, grips the cosmos and its people. In anguish, they dream of the long-foretold bright star.
Join us as we embark on an epic journey, exploring the universe of Energemetra 6.
And we're live, and this is episode 4 of the Energemetra 6 podcast. We're reading Bright Star, chapter 3 today, and we have Mel, as usual. We have my oldest reading John Kasizia, and Luke is here to read Taryn Galton, Keeper of the Mysteries. Before we get started, I do want to do our little ad for Value for Value, so let's go through that real quick. The Energemetra 6 podcast operates on a value for value model. That means that we hope if we provide some value to you in your life, that you'll return that to us in whatever way you can manage. If you're interested, head over to e6universe.com and sign up for our email list to get our free ebooks, and hopefully buy a physical book or some merch while you're there. Or if all you can manage right now is to leave us a good review somewhere, 5 stars or some kind of positive rating, that's more than appreciated. Thank you. All right, so I guess with that out of the way, it's time to dive in. This is Bright Star by me, Jared Michaud, Chapter 3.
The mysteries are the most closely guarded of Kasizia's secrets. He made his prized student their keeper. You haven't a prayer.
By Seaver Wildman Ratting to Ahaz, First Lord of the Dominion, attributed before the Dominion's defeat at the hands of Taryn Galton in the year 572 NST. Ocarist's bridge was large compared to the other rooms Nate had seen. The walls were lined with consoles and command stations of some polished silvery metal, but the lighting and decor had a similar aesthetic to the rest of the vessel, white with black and gray trim. All of the 20 or so consoles were occupied by men and women in uniforms of black and white that matched the room around them. The same symbol Nate had seen framed in his cabin graced the bridge's ceiling in silver and gold inlay, highlighted by strategically placed directional lamps. Impressive as the bridge was, the sight plastered across the largest screen was what immediately caught Nate's eye. It was a space vessel. It could be nothing else. And Nate was hit with the dizzying realization that he was in space, in a visceral way that even the stars visibly moving past the portal screens couldn't bring home. He could see that portions of the sleek, deadly-looking craft were wrecked and dark, obviously torn apart in some terrible conflict, while others were still brightly lit and whole. Before Nate had time to really consider the strange, damaged vessel on the screen, his gaze was drawn to the person who could only be the Keeper. His bronze face might have been chiseled from granite, and he wore a strange stole across his shoulders. Around his neck, atop his own recamocula, hung a faceted pendant in a complex, many-edged shape that glowed with its own light. It was only the bottom of the Keeper's feet and the legs of his throne-like seat disappearing into a blur where they met the deck that gave him away as a holographic projection. In front of Nate, at the back of the bridge, was Ocarist's captain's station. Sitting bolt upright in the captain's station was a slim young man with dark hair, dressed in a sharply creased, double-breasted black uniform with silver trim. His rank insignia, a stylized silver planet, was mounted on the far left side of his chest, as well as the front of his white beret. Standing beside the captain, Loredan was wearing an even finer black robe than he had been before. It was trimmed in silver and embroidered across the breast with another rendition of the symbol Nate had so frequently encountered since he arrived. Loredan and the keeper had apparently been less than easy company for each other while they waited, though Nate read far more discomfort in Loredan's stance than the keeper's. Loredan brusquely motioned for Nate and the Cassizia siblings to step forward.
"Keeper, I've brought him as you asked. Please keep your business brief. We dare not tarry here."
The bronzed man gave Loredan a measured look, then turned to Nate and stared for a long moment, before bending his neck in a deep, respectful nod.
"Lord Brightstar, at last."
His voice was strong, but not overpowering, and his eyes sparkled as he straightened from his bow. Nate nodded to him and smiled. "Keeper, I greet you." The keeper turned his gaze to John and Rachel.
"In the Cassizias, this is a propitious moment indeed. Your father gave me word that I was to pass on to you when the time came for you to once again walk free. Which means..."
He turned his gaze to Loredan.
"That you are to be delayed more than you may wish, Telestic."
Loredan's scowl deepened.
"Galton, we risk much lingering here. If a Dominion fleet were to happen upon us..."
The keeper laughed.
"Loredan, I care nothing for the Telestry or Dominion. I am Terran Galton. The mysteries bequeathed to us by Paul Cassizia, the Guardian, are my charge. For a millennium I have been the keeper of the mysteries, and my task is at hand. Brightstar and the Cassizias can doubtless fend for themselves. Your inconvenience is not my concern."
Loredan snorted in derision.
"If this is indeed Brightstar, he is hardly in any condition to defend himself against the Dominion. When he awoke, he had no memory or even knowledge of Energemetra 6.
"Nevertheless,"
the keeper said, his voice iron,
"I have my business with these three. Do you deny my right?"
Loredan's voice might have been carved from the same ice his face so closely resembled.
"Very well. We will await you."
The keeper shook his head decisively.
"I think not. I will host them aboard Melak. The affairs of the mysteries are none of yours."
Loredan's reply almost crossed the line between diplomacy and open contempt, in tone if not content.
"You would risk the animosity of the Telestry?"
The keeper laughed again, his voice carrying real mirth this time.
"Do you really think you can intimidate me, Drake Loredan? This is the culmination of a purpose so long in the making that you are but a grain of dust in its whirlwind."
Loredan's expression changed subtly until it was cold and verged on hateful. He turned without another word and left the room. The keeper's gaze tracked steadily to the young man in the captain's chair, and he said,
"Captain Eldrun, see that they are transported to Melak."
He nodded, and his image faded away. The three of them barely talked during the transfer from Ocarus to Melak, partly because they were absorbed in their own thoughts, and partly because they didn't wish to be overheard by their pilot. Ocarist's pinnace, the small parasite craft used for atmospheric ship-to-ship transfers, was just barely big enough to fit a half-dozen people, if they jammed together like rations in a vacuum pack. Its pilot was a young officer who looked only a few years older than they. Her uniform was similar to that of Ocarist's captain, with a rank insignia of 3 bars surrounded by a full circle. She looked at Nate, John, and Rachel curiously when they boarded, but kept silent except to give brief instructions about how to secure themselves, which worked out well because the interior of the pinnace was cramped enough to make small talk uncomfortable, and none of the three was willing to voice any of their deeper thoughts. When they finally debarked from the pinnace and through the umbilical and Malak's boat bay into the airlock proper, all three relaxed visibly. The null gravity of the pinnace ride, combined with the discomfort of the cramped quarters, made actually standing up and walking around in Malak's artificial gravity field a relief. Nate sent John and Rachel a relieved grin as John stepped forward to the inner airlock, leading from the boat bay into the ship. John keyed the comm next to the lock and said,
"Three to see the keeper."
They waited while the door behind them hissed shut and sealed magnetically with a snap. Then, after a moment, the lock ahead opened and they cycled through. The differences between Malak and Ocarist were stark. Unlike Ocarist, Malak's corridors were as utilitarian as its airlock. They were well lit, made of clean-looking white composite, but lacked carpeting or decor of any other kind. The fresh smell of the air made Nate stop in surprise, only then realizing how musty Ocarist had been. A young man who was dressed almost as simply as they were standing next to the airlock's manual controls provided as strong a contrast to Ocarist as the air quality had. He gave them a cheerful smile and said,
"Keeper's on his way."
He nodded down the corridor that stretched to their left and added,
"Go on ahead and meet him if you like."
They had only just turned and taken a few steps down the hall, large enough for all three to walk abreast, when the keeper himself turned a corner, stepping out of a corridor only 20 paces ahead of them. He still wore his ceremonial garb, and his Central Asian features were covered in a fine sheen of sweat. The keeper's face was held in the same stoic mask it had been during his transmission to Loredan, but Nate could see his eyes shining. Rachel moved so fast she seemed to teleport forward into his arms, her own wrapped around his neck in a hug.
"Taryn, you grew up!"
The keeper stopped stock still, eyes widening in surprise before slowly returning her embrace, his face finally softening.
"Ah, Rachel, I've missed you."
He turned his head to smile at John, who was standing against the wall to Nate's right.
"And John..."
He shook his head fondly.
"Big brother."
John nodded back, his eyes misty. They were all frozen for a moment. Then the keeper set Rachel gently to one side and turned to bow smoothly to Nate.
"Lord Brightstar, it's an honor to meet you. Long have I waited for this time. You are most welcome aboard my vessel."
Nate smiled and bowed his head formally in return, but his reply was tentative. "Keeper of the Mysteries, Taryn, I'm glad to meet you." Rachel broke in again, looking up at Galton's imposing height.
"I was so sure you were gone, just like Dad."
Her face twisted for a moment as if she might cry, but she shook her head fiercely and reached up to poke him in the chest.
"Why didn't you come to see us?"
Galton looked down at her for a long moment, then shook his head.
"Too many reasons. I am truly sorry, Rachel, but I could not. The powers inhabiting that part of the Abyss are far beyond what I could face, especially when I considered the responsibility Paul bestowed upon me."
Absent-mindedly, Galton reached up to touch the glowing pendant around his neck. He shook his head and turned back down the corridor the way he'd come.
"This way."
Galton led them for a short walk down the corridor he'd first stepped out of, then through yet another cross corridor to a small cabin that had the same Spartan air as the rest of the ship. Once they were seated on sturdy, magnetically fixed chairs, Galton looked at each of them for a moment. He said,
"Our time is far too brief, I fear. I waited to make my approach until you left the Abyss proper. I had no wish to admit it to him, but Drake Loredan was not wrong to be concerned. Even this part of space is not safe."
His lips thinned, and he looked at Nate questioningly.
unless you are prepared to give assurance.
Nate hesitated for a moment, frowning in thought, then finally shrugged. I'm not entirely sure, but I don't think time is on our side. We should make the most of what we have. Galton eyed Nate carefully, then said,
I have a curiosity, if you would indulge me.
Nate nodded, and Galton asked,
Why does Loredan believe you have lost your knowledge of Energemetris 6?
Nate's mouth quirked. He said, Loredan makes a lot of assumptions, and he asks questions he doesn't want answered. Something was telling me not to correct him. Nate paused for a moment, then shrugged and continued. And my memory isn't whole. That trip through the void wasn't easy. He shook his head ruefully. It's like there's a pool of memory in the back of my mind. Sometimes everything seems right, and I can see who I'm supposed to be. Other times, like now, I can see a reflection of something off in the distance, and I only know whether I'm going in the right direction or not. Then there are times when I can't see anything at all, even though the importance of what I'm doing drives me forward. He waved an open hand toward Galton. I know for certain that you are an honored friend, to be trusted. I don't know why. I can't even tell you who I am. It's all there, but I can't get at it. Nate shook his head in frustration and shrugged helplessly. Galton nodded gravely.
We have long expected you, Lord Brightstar, but truth be told, we did not know exactly what we were expecting. Most seemed to think you would appear in a burst of light, and everyone would simply follow you out of awe at your presence.
He shook his head wryly. Rachel was on the edge of her seat, leaning toward Galton as he studied Nate. She had been fidgeting with impatience the entire time the two spoke to each other, and the questions that had been piling up behind her eyes finally spilled out, interrupting their discussion.
How are you still here? We were stuck in there for over 1,000 years. And what happened to Dad?
Galton looked at her for a long time. Then he shook his head.
As to what happened to Paul, I do not know. He left me with this.
He indicated the glowing, strangely shaped gem that still hung around his neck.
He created many objects of power. I know he sought places to conceal them for times of need. He gave me instructions on what to do when you emerged. Then he left. Beyond that, he told me very little, intentionally, I suspect. He wished to protect me from those who might prevent his purposes.
Galton paused again, thoughtful, then continued.
You do know your father and I both aged very slowly after you were imprisoned. I was 9 years old. It took nearly 200 years to reach my full height, and another 200 for me to reach my full strength. I know not what caused this. I have heard rumors of others for whom the same is true, but I've met only two besides Drake Loredan.
He smiled briefly at his own thoughts, but didn't elaborate. John cleared his throat and asked,
What was it Dad left for us?
Galton nodded and said,
First, he told me that you must find the Brightstar and assist him in any way you might.
He smiled almost merrily at the three of them.
It seems you've already done so. Second, he told me to give you these.
Galton withdrew a pair of pendants from a pocket and extended one to John and one to Rachel. Each consisted of a silvery chain with a curiously shaped stone hanging from it. Rachel's stone was blue. John's was green.
He made them for you. He said they may not be the strongest, but for you, the best. Finally, he told me to give each of you this.
He rose from his seat and walked over to John, then hugged him tightly, doing the same for Rachel a moment later. Galton looked each of them in the eye for a moment, then said,
He told me he would return if he could, but you should count him dead unless you see him again.
At this, Rachel looked shocked, and John frowned deeply. Galton said,
These pendants are locked to a skemic. I must imprint a key upon you for them to be anything more than a simple adornment.
He paused for a moment, then asked,
Do you know of the Skemmicks?
All three of them shook their heads. Galton nodded slowly, then a slight frown crossed his face, and the pendant around his own neck brightened. Galton closed his eyes for what felt like a long time. They all simply sat there, staring as the pendant grew brighter and brighter. After a moment, Nate realized the pendant wasn't getting brighter. Instead, it was as if the room around them were fading away. Then suddenly, a streamer of light stretched out of the pendant, reaching toward the edge of the cabin, then beyond, and through the ship, until it disappeared from sight. Then, as Nate's eyes tried to track the stream of light, more and more lights appeared in his peripheral vision. They reached in from all possible directions, twisting into a tracery he couldn't even begin to comprehend or follow. The pattern was so amazing, Nate forgot to breathe until his chest began to hurt. He gasped aloud and heard John and Rachel's intakes of breath simultaneous to his.
What is it?
Rachel asked. Nate just shook his head, gazing around in wonder. Galton laughed joyfully.
This is the Great Skemmick. It is the pattern that binds the universe together.
John had rolled up his sleeve and was running his hand up and down one arm and over his shoulder, where the lines of light gathered tightly into a spiraling, twisting pattern. It took Nate a moment to realize they were following the lines of his recumocula. Galton chuckled.
The recumocula was Paul's first real creation that used the Skemmick. Even after he invented it, he knew very little. Most of his knowledge came from creating the first amulet.
He held up the pendant around his neck, which was so bright and gathered so many of the twisting, swirling lines together that it was difficult to look at. He eyed John and Rachel for a moment, then grinned slightly, almost conspiratorially.
His first amulet was a disaster. He told me later that he destroyed his laboratory.
Galton smiled in fond, exasperated reminiscence.
He always said it so casually, as if it were nothing. I went to look once. There are now three large pieces of the planet where he had been doing his experiments.
The two looked down at the gems around their necks, both of which had the same tangle of fiery lines, with sudden wariness, and Galton smiled slightly.
Paul said it was caused by a flaw in his construction. It shattered.
He shrugged.
It was his first attempt. I do not know when Paul discovered the Skemmick, but this was the highest knowledge of the fields he ever shared with me.
Galton paused for a long moment, his eyes tracing the lines of light in the air. Then he said,
"To grasp Energemetris 6, you must have purpose, else it flows around your mind like the waters of a stream. Each time you reach out, the purpose in your mind creates a pattern. Each time, the fields respond to the pattern you create. That is why they act as you command. A Skemmick is a pattern that already exists. I have met no one who knows the origin of the Great Skemmick. Other lesser Skemmicks."
Galton's voice trailed off, and a pattern of red light burrowed out of the floor and walls, not quite matching the blazing white pattern that twisted in and out of every surface and object. The red pattern was small, and it seemed almost like a copy of a tiny portion of the great web that surrounded them. But it didn't fit perfectly to any part of the great web.
"Even damaged Skemmicks, like the one used by the Telestry, may direct your power. Some are harmless. Others..."
He shook his head.
"As Paul said long ago, do not be entangled by the web of Skemmicks. Even the Telestry put these words in their ideographies, though they seem happy enough to ignore them when they please."
Galton turned away to sit in one of the simple chairs as the dazzling light show slowly disappeared. Some parts simply faded, while others retraced their original path, as if they'd been drawn back into themselves, eventually disappearing into nothing. As the sparkling afterimages faded from their vision, the three young people found Galton studying them with new seriousness. He sat, thinking deeply for what felt like a long time, before he spoke again. And that ends Chapter 3 of Bright Star, and we'll be back in just a minute. The Energemetra 6 podcast is made possible by North Arrow Coffee. North Arrow Coffee is the pro-life coffee company where 15% of every purchase goes to support organizations like Crisis Pregnancy Centers, whose purpose is to support women in the most difficult situation of their lives. If you're interested, head over to northarrowcoffee.co and use promo code E6 to get 10% off with your order.
The advertisements featured did not necessarily represent my endorsements or views.
And we're back. And thank you, everybody, for being here. I really appreciate it. I didn't see anybody join us in the chat this time, but, you know, that's hopefully we'll have some of that at the end of one of these shows, one of these times. Luke, I appreciate you being here. You did a great job reading Terran.
Thanks.
Well, you did. You did good. It was just about perfect for the character. And as always, Mel, you did good. And thank you, oldest. So if unless any of you guys have anything, I guess that's it for today.
All right. Good work, everyone.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, everybody.